Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for the Douglas Coleman Show. Mr. Smooth and Savvy is joined by guests from all walks of life. From the entertainment industry, to authors, to political and social commentators. The famous and not so famous. The controversial and the light and fluffy. We have it all. Now, here's Douglas Coleman.
Okay, please welcome to the Douglas Coleman Show, Keith Lyle. Hey, Keith, how are you?
Hey, Douglas, how are you, man? I'm great.
Doing fine, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. Nice to have you with us. So are you...
Pleasure's mine.
Are you basically a stand-up comic? Is that what you do for a living?
Yes, I'm a stand-up comedian. I do write a lot, acting, jokes for other comics, things of this nature. I've been known to do real estate sometimes. My wife has a real estate business, so I help her with that from time to time. But it's stand-up comedy, yeah, and acting.
Okay.
Occasionally I get some acting gigs.
Well, I see on your bio you've done a few acting gigs.
Yeah.
You were in Driving Miss Daisy?
That was a play, yeah. I did a play here in Las Vegas. I did Driving Miss Daisy. It was my first play, and the last time I'd been in a play was like 12 years old in Hebrew school. So it was the first time I'd been on stage in front of a live audience acting instead of just doing my act. I wanted to challenge myself. And it was challenging. I can't really do plays as much now because it's too much of a time commitment. I'm so busy doing stand-up and all these other things, writing and podcasts. I just don't have time.
Well, so is your story the typical, you were the class clown and... It just went from there?
Kind of. I was more of what you'd call a class comedian. Like, I'd come up with ideas for other people to do dumb stuff. But mostly for me, it was like, my parents were always so miserable. And I just figured, like, seeing the joy on their face when they laughed, like, that's what did it for me. So I always was trying to make them laugh. And then I also noticed that, like, if I could, like, prank my mother, and if it was funny enough, my dad wouldn't spank me. So that was really the goal, like, to pull pranks on my mother. Like, we used to just prank my mom like crazy, and there was no, like, YouTube or anything like that. So, you know, like, I'd be, like, a teenager and be in the, at the grocery store with my mom, going down the, like, the medications aisle and going, "Hey, Mom, which one do you want? The Monistat 8, Monistat 5, which one will help your yeast infection?" Like, just screaming in the neighborhood grocery store so everyone could hear it. And it was like, you know, wait till your father gets home. But it was so funny, my dad couldn't spank me.
So it sounded like he was amused by it. Was she?
Yeah, yeah. Not so much. You know, she was our foil for, may she rest in peace, for many years. It was always, she had a good spirit about her. Days later, she'd laugh. But, it, you know, it was the years of embarrassing me as a child, being, you know, mommy and being her oldest son and not wanting to let me go and all those things. She would embarrass me in front of my friends all the time. So this was my little, I guess, payback.
How many kids are in your family growing up?
It was just me and my brother. My brother's 7.5 years younger than me. So, it was great. I got to take him everywhere, and he was a great second banana. You know, like, I was Ralph Cramden, and he was Ed Norton. It was
Oh, just, okay.
We would yeah, when our family would get together, the cousins and aunts and uncles, we would have bits and we would plan things and we would do all kinds of crazy stuff. So it was really entertaining the family more than, you know, like the kids at school. The kids at school, like, I could goof around, make fun of myself, and I never really fit in. So I wouldn't get bullied, but, you know, the comedy helped with that, but it was really about my family, making them laugh. Like, if I could get a good laugh out of my Uncle Harry, it was great.
So where was your first paid gig? You remember that?
My first paid gig was at a place that is here in Vegas. I forget the name of it, but it was with, her name escapes me. Her name is Pam, and she passed away a few years ago. But it's over right off of Boulder Highway. There was a little casino there, and there was a gig there. And the headliner, I gotta forget the name of it, but I'm so bad with names. Like, this is how I know I have dementia.
Okay, well, wait a minute.
I can't remember anyone's name.
I think I know the one you're talking about. It was a white building?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's closed. Yes, it's not open anymore.
Yeah, it's since closed.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that place either.
Yeah, it was Bonkers. The guy that owns Bonkers Comedy Club had a night in there once a month, and he took a shot with me, and I think he paid me like $50, maybe it was $25, I don't remember, and I did like 15 terrible minutes, and people seemed to like it. It wasn't I didn't get booed off the stage, but the check cleared. And he continues to this day to book me, and that was like maybe 12 years ago.
Was it called the Bonanza Casino or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I know the one you're talking about. I know it's been closed for several years at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just there. Like, nobody's torn it down or nobody's done anything with it.
No, because I think it's still got the gaming license with it. That so there's still some value to it. So as long as it still has a gaming license, no one will tear it down. Maybe someone will come in and buy it or reopen it.
But it was just it was a standalone. It wasn't part of the station franchise, right?
No.
It was on its own.
No, it wasn't a station. It was a standalone. And the comedian's name was Pam Mattison.
Okay.
Mattison. Yeah.
Mattison.
She was great. She used to do voices. Yeah, yeah. She was in that movie with Sally Field and Tom Hanks when the Punchline.
Oh, yeah.
She had a small part in that movie. Yeah, she was such a nice lady. Such a nice lady.
Let me.
And she was very sweet to me.
Let's talk a little bit about stand-up comedy, generally speaking. Because I've had other stand-ups on, and we've gotten into this conversation about the culture being so woke and that it's so difficult for people to do comedy these days because everyone is so offended by everything. I had a guest on named Ted Baliker, who's a filmmaker, and in 2015 he did a documentary called Can We Take a Joke? And it's a really good movie. If you get a chance to watch it, it's on Netflix, I'm sure. George Carlin's in it, Gilbert Gottfried, Adam Carolla, Lisa Lampanelli, a bunch of other people I can't remember.
Yeah, I think I may have seen it, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, Ted's a great guy, and we got into this conversation about this too. So I wanted to get your take. I mean, do you have trouble writing your act in this sort of woke environment where you got to be really careful in your self-editing all the time, or do you just say the hell with it? I'm just going to say what I want.
Well, for me personally, I don't do anything that's too edgy. So I work fairly clean because to me, there's always going to be someone offended. Like, no matter what you do, you know, think about your favorite anything, there's going to be someone that doesn't like it. I was in the movie The Hangover, and I had four lines in The Hangover. And when I got to, after the movie came out, I got to work, and everyone said, "Oh, what a great movie! It's so good, you know. I'm, you know, such a funny movie." Blah blah blah. But there was one person who was like, "I didn't like it." She was like, "I didn't like it. Good for you that you're in it, but I didn't like it." There's always going to be a hater. So I don't even worry about it. If you're easy, and people now are looking to get offended because everyone thinks their voice matters. They get on social media. They think someone gives a crap. No one cares. No one cares what you think. No one cares that you're offended. If you're offended, don't watch it. What I find people have the biggest hard time with is they don't understand what's racist and what's making fun of racism. Because white people are so afraid and what's the word I'm looking for? They have such a guilt conscience of things that they've said and done in the past that they don't understand when a joke is making fun of racism. They just think it's a racist joke. We're in an era now where if you say like Jimmy Kimmel dresses up like Karl Malone and pretends to be Karl Malone, they say that's blackface. That is not blackface. Blackface is a thing, an old minstrel thing, and you're making fun of a particular it was racism. When Billy Crystal dressed up and put makeup on as Sammy Davis Jr., he wasn't in blackface. So people don't understand the difference. They just want to be offended. They want to point something out. They want to say this is wrong. And it's part of the politicized world we live in. Everyone wants to point out that someone's a hypocrite, this, that. Listen, if somebody says something, let's say someone tells anti-abortion joke at a comedy show and you're pro-choice, don't laugh, but don't hate the comic. Just let it go. And you know, that's just one joke. Not every joke is going to be a home run, and you're not going to like every joke. So just, you know, listen to the next one. And all right, you enjoyed 95% of the show. One thing you didn't agree with, big deal, you know, but people aren't like that anymore. So for me, I don't even think about it. If you don't like it, you know, don't come back. The places I work are all feel that way. I don't, you know, the other thing is there's always been a line when it comes to comedy, right? There's always been a line, and very few people can cross the line. George Carlin could cross the line. He knew how to do it, and he had built up enough respect over time to be able to do it. But you have to, there's very few people like George Carlin that can do that. And you have to know yourself as a comic where you stand. And I know that I am not good enough to be like a Bill Burr or a George Carlin to cross the line. So I'll just walk up to it, look at it, and stay on my side.
Well, what I find interesting, and this was brought up in the film, was that the whole society has flipped in the sense that one of the focuses in the film was about Lenny Bruce. And right. Lenny was getting arrested left, right, and center and censored by the mainstream of society. The police were coming in because they said what he said was obscene and it was vulgar and disgusting right. And illegal. Okay. But the one safe haven that he always had was the college campuses in those days, in the early 60s. The kids loved him. And he could just be as dirty as he wanted to be, and it was great. Now it's flipped around. Now it's like every comedian I talk to said, oh, I don't go to universities anymore. No, because those are the most sensitive, woke people on the planet these days.
Well, the thing is, what Lenny Bruce was doing was really more about profanity and sexual content and things of that nature. There's a couple things here. So it was a little bit different. He wasn't necessarily speaking, and at the time, he was speaking in a very progressive way. So that appealed to the people on college campuses. Now, the progressive way is to participation trophies, not hurting anyone's self-esteem. Jokes are mean. You can't be mean. You know, well, there's always got to be a foil in a joke. There's always a foil, right? There's someone who gets it, slips on the banana peel. There's always something. And a lot of these kids can't take it. So it depends, you know, like right now, I think, you know, most sexual content is probably a little too much for college. You know, it shouldn't be, but it is. It's just that the times have changed. The line has moved a little bit when it comes to colleges. It's just I don't even want to give them an opportunity to tell me no. You know, I don't want to give them the joy of having to say, oh, that's too much for me. His jokes were too far. So I don't even want to give him the joy, because they take joy in that.
Well, it's almost...
The other thing that we do now is if it's one person or two people out of 2,000 complain, we have to adhere to the two people.
Yeah.
Not the 1998. It's the two people. And the thing is, we live, you know, politically right now in a minority rule situation, you know, which is fine. That's the choices we've made. But to live our lives worrying about the people out of 2,000 that don't like what's going on, they could get up and leave. No one's holding them there. My friend Don Barnhart does this great joke. We're not the comedy police. There's no one here holding you going, you must listen to these jokes and laugh. No one's doing that. Get up and leave. You want a refund? Take it. No one cares if you write a Yelp review. Like, it shouldn't matter. It just shouldn't. We put too much credence in strangers' opinions.
Right. Well, I can understand.
No one cared.
I can understand Lenny Bruce probably not being welcome on college campuses these days because he was rather edgy, okay? But when I heard Jerry Seinfeld say that he won't do college campuses anymore,
right.
I mean, Seinfeld's comedy was the most innocuous comedy I've ever heard. It couldn't offend anybody.
Absolutely.
And yet he won't go.
Absolutely.
So that's troubling, I think.
And I'll tell you why. Because there's two people in that audience that don't wear socks. So the socks bit,
right,
how you lose socks, is so upsetting to them that those two people that don't wear socks complain, and we have to adhere to those two people because we don't want to upset them.
God.
This used to drive me nuts when I worked in the casinos as a dealer. There'd be, you know, there's someone, when you're dealing in a casino, people are losing money, people are getting drunk, you know, it's easy to have people complain. And there was a time in the late 90s where things were really starting to get corporate in Vegas, where in books it would say, just complain, they'll give you a free buffet, complain about the dealer, complain about the room service, complain, and you'll get something for free. So anytime you opened if you talked as a dealer, someone would complain. If you didn't talk as a dealer, they'd complain you weren't talking. Everyone, and it was just like, you don't need these people. The customer isn't always right. The customer is a jerk off most of the time. If they're just complaining, now we call them Karens, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's always a couple of Karens in the audience that, just leave. You know, cruise ship comedians get it bad, too, because on the cruise ships, if someone complains, oh, no, we don't want to upset them. Of course, they're doing the same thing. They're looking for a free cruise. They're looking, you know, it's like if they don't like it, they can leave. It's a big ship. Go play shuffleboard.
What's the male equivalent of a Karen?
What is the male equivalent of a Karen? I think they call him a Chad, maybe.
I don't know,
but it's kind of the same thing. It's the guy, you know, in my day, it was like, get off my lawn. You know, get off my... It was the guy that used to yell at you, get off my lawn. And now, you know, living in Vegas, we don't have lawns. The only grass that's legal here is marijuana.
Right, right. We have a gravel front yard. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So are you promoting anything, or did you just come by to chit-chat? Because I don't see anything on here.
A little of both. I don't put my calendar on my website because... I don't know why, really. I think there was a time where I was a little embarrassed at some of the gigs I had. Now I should probably do it. I'm in Vegas at the Delirious Comedy Club inside the downtown Grand. I'll be there this weekend and throughout a couple of weeks in November. I'm also at Jokesters Comedy Club, which is at the Alexis Park here in Vegas in the next couple of weeks. Those are my two home clubs, and I perform there quite a bit as well. Oh, on my social media, at Funny Keith Lyle. It's on YouTube, it's just Keith Lyle, but Funny Keith Lyle on all my social media.
Okay. Do you have a website that you want to give out?
Oh, yes. www.funny, F-U-N-N-Y, Keith, L-Y-L-E, funnykeithlyle.com.
Funnykeithlyle.com. Okay. Does that have all your schedules and things of where you're going to be performing?
Yes. I'm going to start putting my schedule up because I do have quite a few dates. I'd like people to show up and have a good time. And, you know, when people say, your comedian tell me a joke, I just point them to my social media because I post like joke videos, just joke, street jokes. And then if they want to see my act, I make them buy a ticket.
Well, Keith, we've got to wind this down. Thanks so much for coming on. It was nice talking to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And
anytime.
Best of luck with your stand-up.
Oh, thank you. I look forward to hearing the podcast back.